two concepts. One of them was Russia being part of European Union and encircle China. And the second one was just weakening Russia and consequently weakening China. In your opinion, why they didn't go with the first concept?
Well, I think it was not a question of integrating Russia into the European Union, but to have better relation, to improve the relationship with Russia in order to tie Russia to Europe instead of tying Russia with China. So that was the idea. So it better to, you could compare that with this idea of Confucius, who said, keep your enemies close to you and send your friends far away. This is exactly that. The Western mentality would try to do the opposite. try to send your enemies far away and keep your friends with you. And in fact, this idea. But when you live in Europe, and incidentally, even more if you work in NATO, as I did, you would see that the hatred for Russia is enormous, especially coming from what Donald Rumsfeld used to call the New Europe. I mean, that's Eastern Europe, basically. The Baltic states, Czechia, Slovakia to some extent, Romania, Bulgaria, Hungary is a special case, and Poland, of course, but Hungary must be taken apart probably. But the rest of those countries are extremely critical towards Russia. And in fact, these are the best allies to the US. If you are, for instance, if you work in the NATO, you would say, and I remember I had very good relationships with other officers from the so-called old Europe. I mean, German officers, Italian officers, Spanish and British, so on. This is the old Europe, so to say. And these guys shared exactly the same ideas as me. But when you were in a meeting and you had people from the new Europe, I mean, Eastern Europe, you had a totally different picture, because these guys are the best allies of the US in the NATO. They do everything what the US want. By the way, if you look, for instance, at the number of the countries that cooperated in the coalition against Iraq in 2003, you would see Ukraine, you would see Poland, you would see Baltic states. All these states were the first ones who joined the coalition against Iraq. And on the other hand, you had old Europe, of course, France as an example, but not only. They were much more reluctant to participate. Of course, they had to work with the pressures of US, so they sent small contingent, but the biggest contingent came from Eastern Europe, by the way. So you could see that in NATO, and you see that in the EU as well. So if you listen, for instance, at politicians from very tiny countries such as Estonia or Latvia, and so on, they are always in the media here. And if you see Ursula von der Leyen, basically they're just Ursula von der Leyen just parroting these guys. So we see the influence of these countries is extremely high, because it in fact it confirms to some extent the hatred that you see here and there in Europe. I mean, for many European, Russia was kind of a strange country, too big country. And that became absolutely obvious with the Soviet Union. And therefore, the geopolitical situation, in fact, was superposed to this fundamental and historical hatred of fear of Russia. Today, the idea that we could be friends to Russia is very difficult for many people to accept, because they were, in fact, in their culture, in their education, they were, in fact, somehow, to some extent, educated with this kind of hatred or fear. I don't know if it's hatred or fear. It's probably a mixture of two, of the two. In any case, having such a big country associated in an economy like the European Union could be an advantage if you can manage it. But if you can't manage it, it can be a serious problem. So there are different discussions about this, and you can take the problem from different angles. And there are many arguments that that speak against having being too close to Russia. I mean, you can explain that it would have been more beneficial for Europe, I think, but on the other hand, you can say you can understand the rationale behind having keeping some distance with Russia. In any case, the calculus of the West was wrong, because making Russia an enemy and not just a competitor is a wrong calculus, because it pushed Russia in the arms of China. And that's exactly what we're seeing now. If we have to remember, though, that the main focus, even considering the Ukraine war, the main focus of the Americans, especially the US, because in fact everything that happens in Ukraine to some extent departs from Washington. The focus of Washington is China. This is the main concern of the US. This is the main threat to them. It's an economic threat, it's a political threat. It's also a kind of influence threat, because China is the big Pacific power. Even if China has no tradition in projecting power in outside its borders, the Americans consider that having such a big competitor in the Pacific area is already a stone in their turf. And the Americans have always considered themselves more as a Pacific power rather than an Atlantic power, even if the US has obviously strong ties with Europe. But they consider their turf, the Pacific, as their turf. And that's the reason why they are very anxious having China growing so fast. And also, in fact, threatening their leadership, because beyond the growth within China, which is obvious, beyond the growth of, or the, let's say, the evolution or the development of new technologies in China, China has also the challenge of selling their products, and not only within the country, but also outside the country. And that's why the Belt and Road Initiative is for China probably less a tool of influence as the West understands it, but it's more a commercial project. But the West understands it as an influential project, a political one, which is to some extent probably true. But I think the main idea of the Chinese is to have a commercial project rather than a political one. By the way, I lived in several years in Sudan and in Kenya, which at the time that was in Sudan in 2005, 2006, and I was in Kenya in 2012, 2013, or 2011, 2013. These two countries were at the time the main, strongholds of China in Africa. They had the biggest project. In Sudan, they had biggest project, the build up the biggest dam in the world, probably may compared to the big dam of the Three or Seven Valleys in China, on the Nile River, and it was a huge project. But it was fascinating to see that you never saw any Chinese in the streets of Khartoum. You never saw the Chinese anywhere. The same in Kenya. The Chinese built the railway connection between Nairobi and Mombasa. They built up a huge highway around Nairobi and that. So they had huge infrastructure projects in Kenya. But you never saw Chinese on the street, never. They were working on the workplaces, I mean, where they had these works, but otherwise you never heard about the Chinese. When I was looking at the politics in China, in Kenya, you had the domestic politics and so on. Nobody talks about the Chinese. The Chinese were inexistent in that discussion. Meaning that, and that's a reason why the Africans like the Chinese, because when they come, they do their work, they build their stuff, and they go, period. They do what they are paid for, and then they go. That's it. And while when you see in, and that's exactly what you're witnessing in Niger, Burkina Faso, Senegal now, in Mali, in North Africa, the French, of course, they brought their soldiers, but they started to influence the local or domestic politics. They start to choose the president. They tried to influence the elections and so on and so forth. As a result, people started to hate them. Because they say, okay, you come to help us, but at the same time, you try to influence the local politics in the way that it's not advantageous for us. And that's exactly the reason why the these countries expelled the French military from their countries. In addition to that, this military presence didn't contribute to provide security in the country. I mean, this was they were just killing terrorists instead of eliminating terrorism, and they had a total tactical approach to the problem and not an holistic and strategic approach to the problem. As a result, the security situation degraded as the French were there instead of improving. So people don't see the benefit of having the Westerners. And on the contrast, the Chinese, again, they come for what they're mandated for, and they leave after they have done their work. So people are very happy with that. And of course, these Belt and Road initiatives, these infrastructure and all that, that will contribute later for the Chinese economy to sell their products. That's obvious. But they are not trying to coerce these countries. They are not trying to influence them. They just come with products. And if you go in general stores in Kenya, in many, I mean, in most, in fact, African countries, it was the only Chinese product. And, you know, they build infrastructure. That means things that are useful for everybody. Well, when you have the French or the British coming in a place, they will build a factory, a production plant. So that will give some work for some individuals, but the idea is just to produce at a cheaper price. That's it. But they didn't really build infrastructure. They did that probably in the 40s, in the 50s, but since then, it's no longer that. I mean, the French presence since the independence of most countries, this French presence or other presence, I mean, other West European presence, was not related to the construction of infrastructure, but just to create opportunities for producing things at a cheaper price so that Europe could buy at a cheaper price. So in fact, it was kind of a selfish aid to these countries instead of promoting development in these countries. So this is a total different approach to development that the Chinese bring. And that means that to some extent, China is, although it's probably not the primary objective, China becomes to be extremely influential in Africa. They are not using that influence to, let's say, steer domestic policies and so on, but at one point they might be able to do that. They are not doing that, and it's I think it's good if they don't do that, and there is no indication that they want to do that. But of course, this is a concern for the Western influence, because the Western influence is just fading away. They are not credible anymore, and that's probably a concern of the of the US. And this is the reason why we try to contain China, and not to, just to contain it. The same, you had this containment policy in the, or strategy even in the 40s, I mean late 40s, early 50s, around China and USSR by the Americans, but it was more an ideological kind of containment. Today, it's really economic containment. We try to prevent the development of these countries. We try to prevent their own these countries to emerge. And remember what Boris Johnson said in April, that means 1 month ago or so, when he was tweeting that the defeat of Ukraine would be I don't remember the exact would be the end of Western hegemony. So this is this idea of hegemony, which is in fact a very negative word if you think about it. It has a very negative connotation, but it's still the way our politicians dare to talk about their presence. So this idea of Western hegemony is extremely strong in the West. As I said before, the West has not understood that we are now in 2024. They think we are 100 years ago. And 100 years ago is 100 years ago, period. So this is a little bit the problem, I think. Yeah.